So hello, we haven't actually started the podcast yet. We wanted to tell you that we have begun the process of monetizing the podcast, in part because we thought we were going to have a radio show, and we made some commitments to some people, and now that's in limbo for reasons that are beyond anyone's control, and we want to make good with our advertisers, which is good because that gives us the motivation to keep giving you the content that you crave, desire, and are frankly addicted to.
Indeed.
So there will be some ads in here, but in terms of like overall commercial content, I'm guessing it's still less than 5% of your valuable time. And I hope you will bear with us through that 5%. In 1934, a salesman from Champion Sportswear walked into Moe's Sports Shop. There, he teamed up with George J. Moe to create the very first University of Michigan branded shirt. After seeing the high demand for this product, Champion went to the other Big Ten schools with the same proposal, and the collegiate apparel industry was born. Moe's Sports Shops is celebrating 100 years of outfitting the Michigan faithful. Visit us at our original 1915 location at 711 North University or online at 100years.mo. That's 100years.moe.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
Welcome to MGO Podcast 7.14, which you probably think is largely about the bowl game that just happened, but really it's just 2 hours of us talking darts with Steve Perez. All right, Ace, you sellout.
Why am I a sellout?
You're just a sellout, man.
Fair enough, I guess.
Welcome back to the podcast.
Or just berating me on.
Well, it could be good.
We'll see how it goes.
So, as we mentioned that we have commitments to people that we are going to fulfill. This podcast is brought to you by Underground Printing and Moe's, our great friends who have supported us for years and years and years before this was actually a full-time occupation. So supporting them really helps us, and Rishi's a good dude, so go do that.
Yeah, I enjoy eating and having a car and all that stuff, so please support them.
Indeed. So Michigan basketball gets through a tough schedule, a three-game series against Purdue, Iowa, and Maryland with a 1-2 record. And honestly, without Caris LeVert, I'll take it.
Yeah, I was kind of happy they pulled out the one there.
And the way they looked against Purdue and Iowa, they didn't look like they were going to challenge for the Big Ten title, but neither did they look like a team that was going to be on the bubble.
No, I mean, Purdue was a little bit more overwhelming than Iowa just because it was, frankly, an awful matchup for Michigan.
It's a bad matchup.
It's a horrible matchup for them. And Michigan actually put, I think at the time, the second best performance offensively that any team had against Purdue points per possession-wise. They just couldn't keep up. But Iowa, I mean, on a day where Duncan Robinson did not have a particularly good shooting day by his standards at all. Walton missed a few. Robinson had that three-pointer at the buzzer at the first half that was a tenth of a second away from going in, or it did go in, but counting.
Well, and they start off in an 11-0 hole as well. Yeah. So,
and they're on. I mean, that game could have easily gotten away from them at a few different points, and instead they hung around until it kind of got away from them at the end there. But
and against a team that had just, let's be frank, bitch slapped Michigan State twice.
To complete their sweep of the Spartans already.
I mean, those games were hardly even competitive. And for Michigan to, you know, look like a team maybe a notch or two below Iowa's level, frankly, looks good because Iowa looks like the class of the league by far.
Yeah. I mean, because they also took down Purdue on the road.
And you know what?
They had an outrageously good start to this Big Ten season.
I didn't say it. Every year I'm like, you know what? This is going to be Iowa basketball's year. I didn't say it this year.
It's like you with quarterbacks, man.
Wait, no,
this year's different.
Oh.
Yeah.
But I didn't say it this year.
Yeah, that's right. That kind of ruins it.
Every year. Every year I'm like, you know what? Fran's going to do it this year with his infinite collection of 6'10 Dirk Nowitzki types. Where does he get those guys?
Dom Yule was made in a factory.
They're just the same dude, except they have different pigmentation. Like,
really?
That's not racist. It's just a fact about their skin.
It was just like you open up like the emoji window and you get all the different choices. That is Iowa.
except they're all long and they all shoot like 40% from three.
Might be why they're really good. And they start four seniors and a junior, which you just don't see that much these days.
No, you do not.
And like they've all played before. And Woodbury and Gasell have been there for like 18 years.
Yeah, man. That's so, just...
That seems not legal, but they've found a way to get away with it.
Yeah. And then they have Utah, which he transferred from Wisconsin. And if you're a Wisconsin fan, you got to be like, you know what? Maybe we couldn't hold on to Utah. But why are we letting him go to frickin' Iowa, which is not only like another team in the conference, but like the team you hate the most in the entire world?
Yep. I mean, I normally am pretty cool with teams not putting transfer restrictions on guys, but that might have been one you want to put on there, Bo Ryan.
I'm completely fine being like, if you want to transfer, that's fine. You just can't be in the conference. Like, I think that's totally cool. Like, I've never been like an absolutist about that. But as soon as you start going outside of like, well, you can't go to Michigan, Chris Clark. Not that Michigan was into Chris Clark.
No.
That's kind of like, what are you doing? But anyway.
And Utah is now number two in KenPom Player of the Year, or has maintained his rank there.
Like the crazy thing, we're not even talking about Michigan basketball. The crazy thing about Utah is you watch him and he blocks like three shots a game, three jump shots.
Yeah. Like, no, he uses his length incredibly well.
Yeah.
And he's quite skilled.
But anyway, he had an inefficient day against Michigan, which I think is a credit both to Duncan Robinson and DJ Wilson.
Yes.
So Duncan Robinson started this season and he was a horrendous defender. And he's progressed to the point where, you know, he's not a target. I don't think he's great, but he's staying in front of people for the most part. You know, I think Utah is a better matchup for him than some other players because Utah is very long but not that quick.
Yeah.
And we saw DJ Wilson get out there. And Utah against DJ Wilson looked almost discombobulated because it was finally like a guy who was even a little bit longer than him who could keep up with him and keep in front of him. And he took some bad shots, and I think he hit a couple. But for most of this game, Michigan had him in pretty good check. And I think that's, one, very important for Duncan Robinson as he kind of moves from being just a shooter into like a
complete basketball
player. Yeah, a linchpin of the team, which he's going to have to be next year. And it's also nice that we saw DJ Wilson do something good.
Yeah, and it was nice to see him do it at the four where, I mean, we're not necessarily expecting him to wind up there, but the fact that they can have the option of putting that too big lineup out there a little bit against certain matchups, that's going to be really big for him.
Like given Michigan's recruiting, I think he is going to be a four long term. Like,
because they do have some bodies in there.
They have so many fives.
They're bringing in two more.
Yeah. And you're going to see, you know, Mo develop, and there's not going to be that many minutes for him at the five. And when he plays the five, he's always pick and pop. He doesn't play at all like a five. And Michigan does need someone to roll to the basket and finish there, which doesn't seem to be Wilson's forte.
No. I mean, and we see that a lot in terms of, I mean, that's been a problem all year in terms of when the offense bogs down. It's usually because the center is just not getting into the paint.
Like when Michigan's offense is really going, you're doing things like Mark Dinal's 9 of 11, and that opens up everything else. In games like, you know, a couple of these games, we saw Michigan have no faith in their ability to get points from their center. Maryland was the exception. So Dinal actually had a pretty solid game against Maryland. I don't think he won the battle with Diamond Stone, but he didn't lose it.
Certainly not down the stretch.
No. But he didn't lose it as badly as Michigan's centers had been losing similar matchups earlier in the year. And I think that was a major factor in pushing Michigan past the post.
Yeah, I mean, especially since with the way Michigan's offense is normally clicking and did in that Maryland game, as long as you're not getting completely overwhelmed in the post, then you can then the team is normally able to kind of keep pace and stay out in front because threes count more than twos.
Yeah.
So so as long as they're kind of treading water, then that should be enough for Michigan to spring a couple upsets maybe and kind of stay in the tournament field.
Yeah, and right now people are projecting them as a 7 seed or an 8 seed, and the Maryland win is a marquee win that I think erases a lot of questions you might have when it comes to Selection Sunday about like what's their best win. And you know, I think you want this team to progress into like, you know, you want to get into the 6 range, maybe a 5 if you get real hot, because then you're not playing a 1 or 2 seed on the second day. So, and I think they can do that as long as they get LeVert back any plays like Caris LeVert.
Yeah. And I think, you know, also with the way this team plays, you know, they've got another crack at Iowa. They're going to get a crack at Michigan State, and they're going to go to Maryland. And again, and in one of those games, you just get the sense that at some point they're going to have a deluge of threes where It doesn't matter who they're playing. They're going to get another big win.
Yeah, I feel the same way. And you're looking at a team that, you know, it's not going to be a 10-8 Big Ten season. You're looking more at 12 wins, maybe 13 if you're fortunate.
Yes, and this upcoming four-game stretch should help quite a bit in that regard.
What is this upcoming four-game stretch, Ace?
They've got Minnesota at home. The toughest game of the stretch is on the road at Nebraska, and then that is followed by a home game against Rutgers and a semi-away game that Penn State decided to put at some pro court, I guess.
Oh, it's at Madison Square Garden.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Oh, yeah, it's the hockey and basketball thing.
Which is cool.
Yeah, because there are going to be more Michigan fans than the Penn State fans, and it counts as a road game.
I think it'll be about 50-50, but I
for the basketball game? Do Penn State people care? That's my thing. It's just like I think.
Yeah, that's a good point. But I figure, like, if you're a Penn State person in New York and Penn State comes, you just kind of go see them.
That's fair.
Yeah. So, yeah, I wouldn't mind if Penn State did that every year.
Yeah.
Because Michigan wants to be in New York. Especially in basketball, you've seen them make that a priority. They've gone to Barclays a bunch, and being able to do it without giving up a non-conference game.
As long as Penn State's willing to give up a home game, Then that's a good deal.
They should be in the preseason NIT every year. That's what I think.
Yeah.
Just because that Bahamas thing is retarded.
It's awful.
It's terrible. Anyway, let's actually talk basketball instead of complaining. Walton's defense.
I can't figure it out, man. I have no idea.
So Melo Trimble is held to 2 points, and Melo Trimble is the kind of guy who's a nightmare to stay in front of, and he draws a ton of fouls, and he's completely taken out of that game. Part of that was foul trouble on his part, but he got 30 minutes in that game and didn't do anything.
Yeah.
And I was really frustrated with him against Purdue because those guards aren't anywhere near his level, and he was consistently getting, like, beat, and Michigan's defense was folding up into a little origami ball of doom because, you know, Walton and Marr couldn't stay in front of those guys. And I was just like, what is going on here?
Yeah, that was bizarre to see. And then he kind of had an effort that sort of fell in between those two games against Iowa where it wasn't as bad as it was against Purdue. But and Mike Cassell is a better player than any guard on Purdue. But
now, yes.
Yes. Like, a couple of years ago, that would have been a very strange thing to say.
I'm just watching Cassell. I'm like, when did he get good?
Yeah. I thought, you know, he let Cassell get by him a couple times. He was one of the culprits. I thought Michigan did a pretty terrible job of defending the baseline, especially in the first half. And that freed up some corner threes for Iowa that helped them put some distance out there. And those are frustrating just because, I mean, I played basketball until like the sixth grade, and I know not to give up the baseline on defense off the dribble. That's just a huge no-no.
Yeah.
And so to see that happen like 4 or 5 times in the first half was a little frustrating. And that wasn't all on Walton, but it's just weird because I don't know what to expect from him on a game-for-game basis, on offense or defense at this point, I would say.
The rebounding is the one constant. Maybe
yes.
Some rebounding
is
the 6-1 point
his
guard.
His center-like defensive rebounding.
Who knows? Weird player. Good player, but very weird. And then late in the Maryland game, I think, you know, Michigan falls into a funk where for 5-6 minutes they can't get anything going to the basket. And we see Zach Irvin kind of go back to what he was at the end of last year, where he was a focal point of the offense and he's swooping into the lane. And I think he's figured out that he's like, you know, 6'7". He's got super long arms and he's got that swooping layup that nobody can really do anything about, that he's really kind of bringing into his game. I think, you know, he obviously had a really rough start to the season because of the back injury, but now I think he's playing like the guy we were hoping he was going to be consistently at the end of last year. And that's the primary factor why Michigan managed to, like, they blew that lead, they got down to tied, and every Michigan fan is like, we're losing.
Yeah, this is doom.
And then Irvin steps up to the plate, and I think that's a great sign for the rest of the season.
Yeah, he's finally been – I mean, he's stepping into three-pointers and knocking them down, which is just something that he could not do earlier because of his back stuff. And now he's at 44% in conference play from three, which is a lot better than the, like, 20 that he was putting up before that.
He was frankly brutal early in the season.
It was rough. So – and he's got the 16th best assist rate in the conference right now. And as the guy who's not the primary distributor most of the time, I mean, he kind of functions like that now that LeVert's out a little bit, but it's a little bit more evenly spread between Walton and Irvin and Robinson even, too, a decent amount.
Yeah, and we talked about his defense, but Robinson is also showing a more diverse offensive game, which he's going to have to do because people are playing in his shorts now, right? So
yeah, he's been getting to the basket more and he's using that shot fake so well.
Yeah, he had that critical layup in the Maryland game where he got all the way to the basket and put it up reverse. And
with his left hand, that was gorgeous. And then ESPN didn't replay it, which made me really angry.
Well, and we saw a couple of plays like that against Iowa, too. And I think it's clear that that's in his wheelhouse. And maybe sort of like the defense, he has to get used to doing it in a game against D1 opposition. But, you know, I think we're seeing a little bit of a Stauskas trajectory. And he's not going to be that guy because, you know, Stauskas is a little bit smaller, a little bit more agile. But the development we've seen from him in half a year on the court, I think really I'm excited to see what he does next year.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to watch because the three-pointers have not gone away.
No.
You know, and they're never going to with him. And at that point, you know, his assist rate keeps climbing. He's really just adding chunks to his game. I'd like to see him draw a few more fouls, I think.
Stand,
especially because he gets guys up in the air. And sometimes you
just want him to take the
just
Reggie.
Just let him crash on you, do the Chauncey, whatever you want to call it, and just... And especially with him, you never know he might just get that 4-point play too.
Yeah. Well, and he's basically automatic from the line, so the incentive to get those fouls is much higher. So,
but at this point, I expect him to add that at some point because he keeps adding these pieces.
Well, and you know, he wasn't. I get trapped in these like rhetorical things, like I can't say just a shooter and like crap. He wasn't just a shooter at Williams. He was the focal point of that offense. He was their go-to guy, and. Even at a D3 level, to do that implies skills with the ball.
Yeah, you're going to the basket at that point.
So you know, I think we're going to see him, you know, really round into one of the top players in the conference, if not the country, next year, if he's not already. Like we are talking about the guy with the number one O rating in the country, right?
That we are.
Yes. So
down to second in the two shooting categories.
Well, but his usage, how much usage does he have?
His usage is only at 17% right now, but his shot percentage is over 20. So,
but like to be like a real star, you have to push that up into the 24, 25 range most of the time. Like the Stauskas year was a bit of an exception because Michigan was just so efficient that they didn't need him. But, you know, getting his usage up while keeping his efficiency relatively stable. I mean, it's always going to go down, but just.
Yeah, it'd be pretty unbelievable if you break 20% usage and your O rating is anywhere above 140. Then
completely
probably insane. Michael Jordan.
But overall, you know, Michigan has stabilized itself after a rough year and a third where it looks like this is definitely a tourney team. And it's about trying to find something more at the five and getting LeVert back and then kind of solidifying your defense as much as you possibly can.
And one thing on that front, because we went past Zach Irvin pretty quickly, but I think his development on the defensive end and his ability to at least hang with the opposing fours has been enormous for helping out the rest of the perimeter defense and at least keeping, you know, Michigan's not a good defensive team by any stretch.
No, this is not even a good defensive team by beeline standards. I think they're, what are they on KenPom now? They're like down to 132 or something.
133.
So that's not.
Dang, dude.
I looked it up.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Clearly. It probably was 132 and then changed with some update
too. I'm sure it was. Like High Point played somebody. But anyway, you know, that is not up to even like crappy Michigan defense standards on beeline's better teams when they're like in the 70s. I think one year they got up to 48th, and that was very exciting when Jordan Morgan was a senior. So like they have a big deficiency that I don't know if it's going to get fixed this year just because of the personnel. I mean, you hope that things
see it, especially since, you know, the big man play, if anything, has been better than it was originally. And that's
But they've gone from disaster to coping, and I don't think it's going to get any better this year.
Yeah, there's only so much, and especially with DJ Wilson's really the only guy with huge shot blocking upside, and I think that's the thing that Michigan needs if they're ever going to want to break through and become an above average defensive team.
Yeah, I'd settle for like not hair pulling at this point.
Yeah, that'd be nice. That would be nice, but no, I think kind of the hope here is the whole team kind of does what Duncan Robinson did, where it's you just go from really bad to passable.
Yeah.
And then Michigan has a bit of this is foreshadowing for the hockey segment, but you know, a bit of an Indiana football field.
We do. I mean, both of these teams feel a lot like Indiana, or maybe Baylor if things are going well.
So. Yes, maybe when Karras comes back and can stick him into the Baylor category. But for now, it's a little bit more of a in Indiana. Yeah. It's tough to figure out.
All right, we will take a break, come back, and we'll talk a little bit Aces Hockey Podcast. This is the MGO Podcast presented by UGP and Moe's.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Hi, this is Matt Demarest from Homeshare Lending. By now, you've probably read about my company on MGO blog, and I wanted to introduce you to a couple of the most important people in my life, my sons Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
I'm 7.5.
Colby, how old are you?
I'm 5.
Okay, boys, I have 3 really important questions to ask you. Who's your favorite team?
Michigan.
Who's going to win the big game?
The Wolverines.
And if you could buy or refinance a house with any company, who would you use?
Homeshare Lending.
Good boys. Homeshare Lending, 855-6-BE-SURE. Visit us online if that works better for you. Homeshurelending.com. HomeshureLending.com. We've helped Brian, Seth, and a bunch of readers buy or refinance their homes, and we'd love to help you too. All right, only thing left to do. Boys, can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue.
Homeshare Lending, NMLS number 1161358. Again, give us a call, 855-6-BE-SURE.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well-known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, a fully equipped kitchen in every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693. Aces Hockey Podcast is here, presented by Underground Printing and Moe's. Ace, your hockey. It is podcast time.
All right. I think that's a sentence.
No, it's not. But whatever.
Yeah.
So Michigan is up to 7th in the pairwise, which is very exciting because they didn't sweep this weekend. They got a tie and they got a win and they still went up, which is kind of amazing. I had a post today about it. And Michigan's schedule, which looked like a complete albatross early in the year, is actually rounding into something that is acceptable.
Mostly because it seems like they're getting every single break possible at this point.
Yes. So everything that could go right reasonably is going right. Robert Morris is the best team in Atlantic Hockey. And RPI still kind of overrates teams that have a high overall win percentage, especially when they're your opponents. And Dartmouth has won 5 of 6. BU is a lot better than I think people expected without Jack Eichel. Even Ohio State, they went and they won their holiday tournament, which turned them from a team that was in kind of the Michigan State range where it's like, we're one of the worst teams in the country.
And just an anchor.
Yeah, just an anchor on your schedule into a team that is not good by any stretch of the imagination, but they're in like the 30s, which is a big difference. And the league has really stratified this year. So there are 3 teams that have a shot at the tournament, and there are 3 teams who are terrible. And I think Ohio State is actually a little bit better than that, but their record isn't good. And that helps because there's a quality win bonus for the RPI that counts the top 20 teams. And both Penn State and Minnesota are currently in there. They should probably stick in there and that'll help out. So the buffer that I thought Michigan had is actually expanding. So now I'm thinking less about like what happens if they're on the bubble at the end of the season. Are they going to make the tournament? And now I'm thinking more about how on earth is this team ever going to win four straight games with this defense?
I mean, it's you're kind of just playing the lottery at that point with this team because it's, you know.
And that used to be a curse for Michigan hockey is that this is the worst playoff sports format that has ever been devised. Single elimination playoff hockey at neutral sites is the dumbest. Is the dumbest
thing. It is a random number generator.
But for Michigan, now that sounds like a promise instead of a curse. So that's nice. This weekend was completely crazy. Michigan gives up a 5-4 lead with under 10 seconds left to tie Ohio State on Friday. They enter the third period on Sunday down 5-3, and they score four straight goals before allowing Ohio State a shot. That was after a second period where Ohio State had 27 shots. I have never seen a hockey game like that either way.
And yet somehow that just kind of perfectly encapsulates this hockey team.
I mean, like from one period to the next, from one shift to the next, they can either be the best team in the country or, well, not the worst because Michigan State is the worst, but
always
they can be extraordinarily frustrating. The post today was called Baylor or Indiana. And right now it's feeling a little Baylor-ish, but a little Indiana-ish.
And I guess if we'd asked you after the second period.
Yes, I would have definitely said Indiana.
Yeah.
But for all of that, they're 14-3-4 this deep into the season. And given that that schedule they had doesn't seem as bad now, now I'm maybe giving that record a little more credence into as to how good they are. And that is largely because their top line is the best in the country.
That'll help.
And Connor Comfort and Mott, you know, Comfort and Mott came together. They played in the U18s together. They've always played best together. But Red, you know, team had been struggling a little bit. He likes to put the lines in a blender, and they had spent, you know, big chunks of their career apart from each other. This year, they stuck together. They put Connor on that line and just kind of let it roll. And Connor and Mott are currently tied for the national lead in goals per game. Two guys, same line, tied for the national lead in goals per game. Connor's second in the country as a freshman. Comfort is fifth. Mott is 13th. They're plus 24.
That's good.
Plus 24 on a team that gives up that many goals. and this is, you know, if this continues, you're really going to have to go back to TJ Hensick and Kevin Porter and Kolarik and whoever was on a line with Brendan Morrison as like the greatest lines in recent Michigan history. And that is driving most of this success. And then you look at the defense and honestly, other than, you know, Downing's predilection to take stupid penalties, get suspended, and give up two-on-ones, which is bad, the rest of the defensive core has kind of settled down. Like, I thought Werenski started off this year not giving very much effort. And he's improved over the course of the season. When he went to the World Juniors, they relied on him. He played 30 minutes in one game. He was their captain. And he's giving more defensive effort than I've seen him give in his career so far. And I like Boca well enough. I like Cutler Martin a great deal, although he's obviously going to be out for a couple years.
Got a little punchy.
Yeah. So at the end of the Ohio State game, an inexplicable brawl broke out. There wasn't anything dirty really in the game very much. It wasn't even a chippy game. And then all of a sudden everybody's fighting. And I get it, it's Michigan-Ohio State, but honestly.
Well, Michigan-Ohio State hockey has never really had that feel, I don't
know. No, like those games don't get that chippy. I was shocked by it. And Cutler Martin just can't do that. I mean, that's the guy's,
especially with the ref laying right there.
The ref laying right there on his arms, he can't defend himself. He got a DQ, so he's out for at least one game. And I would be surprised if he didn't get at least the three that Downing got for.
And honestly, he probably deserves it.
He does.
It's just a really dumb thing to do.
So he can't do that. But in terms of his game, I think he's relatively responsible. I really like his shot, which gets through to the net quite a bit. I think he's a quality player. The kind of things that the team does as a whole are very frustrating when it's Indiana time. So what you see is you see guys way out of position, like they just don't really know where they should be. They're obviously very, very talented. But ever since Mel left, I think he took with him kind of the defensive backbone of the team. And they haven't figured it out. I don't think they're going to figure it out.
They're kind of running out of time at this point.
But so far they've managed to outscore their mistakes. And if that continues, And I think there's a pretty good chance of that because there's no team in the country that has the kind of depth Michigan does. Like Short and Danks on the fourth line are good players. And, you know, the third line, which is mostly freshmen, has been a bit of a revelation. And, you know, you're looking at, you know, Selman and Nieves as a second line. I've never been, like, super high on those guys. But if you're talking about that line as the third line, which I think they actually are.
And Selman's been a first liner before, right?
He's up and down. He's one of those guys who, tough player, you know, net player, kind of like Brandon Kalinicki. And a guy who I've always been a fan of, but he's bounced out of lineup some, but he gets to the net and he's a tough guy to play against. So they have so much going for them and they just can't figure out how to keep the puck out of their net. So, I mean, I just wanted them to make the tournament this year and it looks like that's going to happen. So if they do that, I mean, it's a weird year in college hockey too, because the top team in the RPI is Quinnipiac. And
not the team you'd expect.
No. And they've got like North Dakota is currently a one seed, but the other one seeds are teams that are like, what, Harvard? What is going on? So it's not going to be like that year where Michigan got to the title game, but to get there, they had to go through one of the all-time loaded North Dakota teams, and Sean Hunwick got the – I think he already had the moniker Tiny Jesus, but he really lived up to it.
He earned it on that one.
In that game. So I don't think there's a team out there like that. And maybe Michigan just rolls through it, and they're like, yes, we gave up 5 goals, but we scored 9. So
– I get the feeling with this team that it might end up just coming down to – how whatever NCAA tournament game and how it's called just because of the explosiveness in their power play. If they're on the power play at all, a decent amount, it just seems like it's kind of impossible to keep up with them.
Well, yeah, I think it'll come down to Racine really. They look like they're set to go with Racine. I know he gave up 11 goals on the weekend.
What an impressive 11 goal allowed effort.
It's a really good weekend considering the fact that he gave up 11 goals. And if, you know, he's able to make some saves that keep goals out of the net because there's going to be some grade A's that he faces, then maybe Michigan can squeak by. But, man.
At the very least, it should be exciting.
Yes. I'm gonna repeat this in every format that I have a platform. Dan Dickerson was awesome as a play-by-play guy, which is shocking because I've only really heard him do baseball.
Yeah. And he's great on Tigers broadcast, but it's just a totally different thing.
Baseball is like Ernie Harwell, hey, I'm your best buddy.
You're chatting at a picnic type of vibe.
And hockey is totally different. Like Mike Emmerich speaking 700 words a minute, using every verb he can think of. It's a totally different environment, and Dickerson was sublime.
Yeah, that's tremendous versatility for an announcer. That's kind of Tirico-esque there in terms of his ability to switch sports and stay on top of it.
So Dan Dickerson for Michigan play-by-play guy.
Because they have none right now.
And Jim Brandstetter is an institution, but I think it's clear that he's miscast as a play-by-play guy. And I also want to shout out Manny Legacy because I thought like he was giving us pretty interesting inside baseball stuff. Like he's talking about how one of the defensemen got out of the dot line. I don't even know what a dot line is. And then he like showed it on the Telestrator. He's like, this thing is what he did wrong. And I disagree with what he did. And I was like, thank you. That is Spielman-esque.
Yes.
I thought Legacy had a little bit of that goalie thing that goalies always do.
Where they talk about goalies a lot.
Yes. And it's worse than soccer. Because like goalies, they really don't matter. I mean, they matter, but they're not like nearly as involved.
In hockey, you can get a little bit more, but you get the guy like, I don't know. I always think back to ESPN and Darren Pang and how it was just all about the goalie with Pang.
Yes, and Legacy does do that. But he was also really good when Connor scored that power play goal from the sideline. He's kind of on one knee fading away and he roofs it. Legacy was all over how hard that was in a way that I don't think I would have appreciated because I didn't play hockey. Myself, but he really drove home what an impressive goal that was by Kyle Connor. So I thought the announce team was terrific all around.
Yeah, no, they did a great job. And it was, I mean, for me, especially tuning in, you know, having not watched a ton of hockey this year and the have that level of an, especially since I'm used to tuning into games on BTN or whatever, where the announcing quality is a little
okay.
It can be decent, but sometimes, especially with the color commentary, it's really touch and go. And I thought Legacy was solid, and to have Dickerson calling it the way he did, it was nice to hear that.
One thing that was real bad is that these games were on at the same time.
Yes.
So I actually sold my hockey tickets because I wanted to watch both games, and I managed to watch most of both games. But this is just another – like this season's hockey schedule has not been good for a season ticket holder who cares about basketball or football. which they all
most people
do.
Yeah.
So like it's just something that they really got to maybe be more careful about. I kind of understand why.
At least with this one, both games weren't at home or anything like that.
I understand why the Sunday game, because they always have home and home with Ohio State. That's fine. But like, you gotta try to move one of those games, probably the hockey game, if it's at all possible, because I like to watch both sports, but not at the same time.
Yes.
So hopefully they get that figured out next year with whoever the new AD is, who I will be your friend if you just help me out a little bit.
Just put together a hockey schedule that doesn't suck.
Yeah. All right. This has been Ace's Hockey Podcast, sponsored by Underground Printing and Moe's. Good job, Ace, with the Hockey Podcast. Yeah. We are going to come back with Inside the Crooked Blue Line. We're going to talk a bunch of Cruton because, my God.
There's a lot of Cruton to talk about.
There is.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
In 1934, a salesman from Champion Sportswear walked into Moe's Sports Shop. There, he teamed up with George J. Moe to create the very first University of Michigan-branded shirt. After seeing the high demand for this product, Champion went to the other Big Ten schools with the same proposal, and the collegiate apparel industry was born. Moe's Sports Shops is celebrating 100 years of outfitting the Michigan faithful. Visit us at our original 1915 location at 711 North University or online at 100years.moe. That's 100years.moe.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well-known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, a fully equipped kitchen in every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Say hello to the bad guy. They say I'm a bad guy. I come from the bottom, but now I'm mad fly. They say I'm a menace, that's the picture they paint. They say a lot about me, let me tell you what I am. They say I'm a bad guy. Say hi to the bad guy. I come from the bottom, but now I'm mad fly. They say I'm a menace, that's the picture they paint. They say a lot about me, let me tell you what I am.
Welcome in, Steve Lorenz of 24/7 for Inside the Crooked Blue Line. How are you doing, Steve?
Good, guys. Good. A little stressy. It's going to be a long 2.5 weeks here, but it should be a good 2.5 weeks for Michigan fans.
Yeah, it's got to be good for your subscription numbers. It's kind of like Michigan has, like, what, 11 spots 2 weeks before, like, approximately?
Somewhere in that neighborhood. Lots of different possibilities about how it finishes out, too. I mean, it's, under Hoke. They usually had a pretty good class, and it was usually mostly wrapped up at this point. Right now, I think we are in complete opposite mode, where there's a ton of great players coming up in the next couple weeks and a lot of top targets that are deciding even here in the near future. And tell you what, man, it's going to be a different ball game the next 2 weeks than it was the last couple signing days that I've covered. So
it is. I'm thinking about upgrading our Cloudflare package to see if it can handle the traffic. But anyway, it's going to be a crazy signing day. We're going to go position by position here. We're just going to try to be as comprehensive as possible. And if this podcast hits 3 hours, well, then that's what happens. So we're going to start off at wide receiver, where Michigan seems to have four prospects who may or may not be in the class. One of them, Nate Johnson, is currently committed but visiting Notre Dame this weekend. Eddie McNoom, the greatest name in the history of recruiting, decommitted from Oregon and is visiting Michigan. So is Donald Stewart this weekend. And Pai Young visited for Ohio State, and he has constantly maintained Michigan as his leader but is taking visits to Florida State and other places. Who ends up in this class? Who doesn't end up in this class? And how good are these three-star guys that – Michigan seems to have made major priorities.
Sure. We'll start with Nate Johnson. Yeah, visiting Notre Dame this weekend. I think he's supposed to visit Penn State the weekend after that. Despite that, I'd say the Irish are probably the much bigger threat of those two programs. Our director of scouting, Barton Simmons, is located in Tennessee, obviously 24/7 centralized in Nashville, has seen Johnson live many times and is convinced that he's going to be a star wherever he ends up signing. I know he was, I think he was runner-up for Mr. Football in the state. Again, guy with great explosiveness, really good with the ball in the air for a guy his size, too. Seems to have made a lot of diving catches in his highlight reel. I mean, that's just a guy that knows how to get the ball, knows how to pinpoint. You know, I don't think that he's going to sign with Notre Dame or anywhere else. But again, you have to operate under that assumption when a kid is verbally committed. You know, Notre Dame is hot after Demetrius Robertson, who we have listed as, I think, the number one overall athlete in the country, along with Mecole Hardman. I think once one of those two guys. So, you know, it'll be interesting with him. I still expect him to sign with Michigan, though. Jed Fish actually was in Tennessee on Sunday night and had an in-home with Johnson. Sounds like it went well. So they're working to keep him, and they'd love to sign him. With McDoom, Wolverine 24/7 guy that our readers know, Michigan pulled off one of the smarter recruiting, I don't even know what you'd call it, strategies.
It was a scheme.
Yeah, it was. They schemed. I mean, they schemed successfully here, continued to recruit him after his commitment to Oregon. Meanwhile, Oregon's McDoom commitment pushed Dylan Crawford out. Michigan gets Dylan Crawford. Michigan continues to recruit McDoom, wanted him up for an official in January, which was the plan the entire time. Time comes for him to come up. Oregon doesn't let him, doesn't want him to, says, we'll take your scholarship. He says, well, fine then, too bad. And now Michigan's in a really good position to get his commitment on Sunday, sometime, I think, on the official visit weekend. And they end up with two playmakers, two four-star level playmakers, in my opinion, and Oregon ends up with zero. So McDoom is another one. He was a guy that Michigan offered based off of his senior film. They actually practiced at his high school for the Citrus Bowl. Definitely think there's some strategy involved in that with all the high schools in that area. So he's definitely a player that they really liked. Again, speed, athleticism. I mean, they're immediately, regardless of who they sign, I mean, if they sign any mix of the guys that we're talking about, have immediately upgraded the athleticism at the skill positions. Stewart is a teammate with Rashawn Gary, who obviously we know will be up there this weekend with him. Stewart's coming up on Friday, I believe. He'll be flying in. For him, it's either Michigan or Stanford. It's one situation. His situation's kind of up in the air, I think, personally. I think the crystal ball favors Stanford. I've had it on Michigan since April.
You have?
And I'm keeping it at least through the weekend. He did get accepted to Stanford, though, which a lot of times when Stanford's recruiting a guy, that sometimes can be the toughest hurdle, is actually getting into the program. He did get accepted there, so it is a legitimate Stanford-Michigan battle. Again, I think Michigan, he's a unique wide receiver compared to who they already have committed, especially with us believing that there's a decent chance that Amir Mitchell plays defense in Ann Arbor. So, you know, he gives them something on the outside. And I know our Auburn guys randomly did a great breakdown of Stewart. He went down there for a visit last month. They did a great film breakdown of him. They watched him live, and they loved him. So, you know, I think he's got a lot of skills that Michigan could utilize. And that leaves Pi Young. Pi's been a Michigan lock or lean for quite a long time now. I think he's another one. I had my crystal ball on since July. He might be the odd man out if Michigan gets McDoom, let's say, or Stewart, or decides they like Stewart. With Pi, though, the one thing that Pi has going for him with Michigan is that Pi could play cornerback at the next level. So if they were to miss, let's say theoretically, again, I don't think they will, but let's say they theoretically were to miss on like LeVert Hill, I think that would put Pi Young right back into play, and they would take him as an athlete. So there's still a good possibility that Pi ends up in this class, but I think it's a much more murky situation with him than it was in, let's say, about a month or a month and a half ago, just because Michigan, again, they're in on some players that they have really high on their board.
Tight end. Chase Allen is obviously a heavy Michigan lean at this point. He doesn't have any other officials scheduled. He's going to likely commit in the near future. Would Michigan take a third tight end? Devin Asiasi How's Michigan look there? And then Jacob Mathis is a name that's been out there for a while that nobody really has a good read on. Is Michigan still strong with him?
Sure. With Chase, yeah, I think it's more of a matter of if, not when. When, not if. Yeah, both. just a matter of when he does it. He had a great official visit. Pretty much told every reporter that Michigan's his leader. Wasn't really a secret. I think actually Michigan was a little surprised that he didn't verbally commit while he was on campus this weekend. I know we expected him to. But again, I mean, I think they're in really great position to land him. And I think he's better than the 87 rating that we currently have him at. I mean,
he's a bit of a project.
What's that?
He's a project, right? He played a lot of basketball. He needs to fill out a lot.
His film is great, though.
Yeah, but there's a lot of projection to see if he can ever actually block anybody.
That's true. Although actually his blocking is not bad on that tape. I mean, he's taking on tiny high school.
He's like
210. Yeah, but it's different than like Ian Bunting's high school film. He's actually in line and blocking.
That's true.
I agree. I think he's a guy that'll see a bump, to be honest, just because our ratings are mostly based on projection. He has the type of skill set. I think the first thing that Michigan even looks for, too, when they're looking at a tight end, they always like to see how a guy can high point the ball, and he's amazing at that. I mean, I think that's his best asset on film. Primarily basketball player, like you guys said, you know, that's kind of what Antonio Gates was. Again, I'm not even remotely comparing him to Antonio Gates, but he is that same sort of skill set he'll just have to develop. So, and they're confident they can. I think with Allen, theoretically, and with McKeon already on campus, I think they have two very, very high ceiling players at that position. So they'd be happy with that. But I do think that Defen Asiasi out of De La Salle in Concord, California, is right up there also. I think he's a guy that they look at as too good to turn down as an athlete, just as a pure athlete. They are recruiting him primarily as a tight end, but he's a guy maybe could play offensive line. He's a bigger body already. I think he weighed in at 255 or 260 at the Army game a couple weeks ago. But he also, and I know our national guys at 24/7 actually believe he projects better on the defensive line. Like his explosiveness at his size, tight end. I don't know what they saw down at the Army game. I didn't get too in depth with them about it, but it sounds like that they like him better as a defensive end. But Michigan likes his blocking ability up front at tight end. And he has soft hands also, could be a receiving threat too. So, he's a guy that they'd be more than satisfied with Allen and McKeon. But Asiasi, I mean, he's a top 100 guy at one of the top programs in the country. So I think that he's a guy that they would work to take.
Any read on like way. Where he might be favoring at this point? I know he's got officials to take still, but he and his teammate Boss Tagaloa have not really, it's been unclear where they might be leaning this whole process.
Sure. I think the two schools we keep an eye on with them are UCLA and Washington. They both just visited Washington last weekend. UCLA has always kind of been around. These two guys, I know, the package deal thing is something that's really overrated when you're following recruiting because it doesn't usually come to fruition. But these are two guys that I could definitely see signing at the same school. And Michigan could be that school. I wouldn't count Michigan out at all. I actually originally kind of didn't really count them out, but just didn't think Michigan was much of a threat, especially for Asiasi. But Michigan really turned on the heat within probably the last month or two and got Asiasi to cancel an Alabama official, actually, to come up to Ann Arbor this upcoming weekend. So I think they feel like they're right back in the thick of it for them. You know, Northern California guys, they're really familiar with Jim Harbaugh in San Francisco and at Stanford. So I know the Asiasi especially was a huge 49ers fan and really like couldn't believe he got an offer from Jim Harbaugh when Michigan originally offered. So I expect them to impress for both guys on the official.
On the offensive line, Michigan is after Texas grad transfer Jake Rollerson, who just visited. And they had a secret visit from Steven Spinellis, who nobody even knew about it before it happened. He's a Virginia commit. How likely are they to take Spinellis, and what's Rollerson's situation?
So Rollerson, UCLA was his only other scheduled official visit that I was aware of, but it sounds like that there's going to be some more suitors lining up for him to try to get him up for the last week. I think Oregon is going to start pushing for him. I think Florida is another school. I think that's starting to sniff around with him. Everyone I talked to, there were a couple people I talked to that were around him throughout the weekend, said that he felt like he was a fit in Ann Arbor. Obviously, Michigan would love to bring in a guy that could potentially come in and start at center next year, or at the very least be right in the thick of a competition there to replace Graham Glasgow. So the intel I got was pretty positive for Michigan, but I do know, you know, he's officially visiting UCLA this upcoming weekend. Originally, that's where I thought he was going to go, but optimism has grown in the last couple of weeks as far as Michigan's possible chances with him. With Spinelis, I'm not 100% sure that Michigan would take a verbal commitment from Spinelis right now. I think they're setting up to maybe see how their board shakes out, and then they can make a push for him at the last second. I assume, again, yeah, he's kind of a mystery guy. I talked to him very early in the process when Brady Hoke actually offered him, their staff offered him. And, you know, he's been committed to Virginia for quite a while, but obviously there's some transition on their staff. I feel like Michigan, if they pushed hard, they probably could get him. I mean, his teammate, Devery Hamilton, obviously a big part of Michigan's class right now. I mean, going in two teammates and tackles that in high school playing together in college, I think probably a pretty enticing situation for him. But the impression I get is that Michigan's going to wait it out a little bit, see how things shake out, and then maybe make a late push for him, depending on who they fill the rest of their class with.
On the defensive line, Rashawn Gary is obviously the number one target. There's been some Ole Miss chatter. There's been some USC chatter. Please reassure us, or don't.
Sure. But please do.
But please do.
Sure. You know, I can see why Ole Miss writers may want to put their money on the Rebels in this situation. You know, after a 10-win season this year, you know, they've invested in a lot of recruitments that have really paid off in the past, like Laquan Treadwell and Laramie Tunsil, among others. You know, so like I said, I mean, if I was an Ole Miss fan and I was putting a bet out there on it, I can see why they may put their money where their mouth is in that recruitment. He did just visit USC. USC, actually, so I interviewed Rashawn. I think I was one of the first people that actually ever interviewed Rashawn. He hadn't been offered by the Trojans yet. They were the one school he said he wanted an offer from more than anybody. So it doesn't surprise me that, A, he ended up officially visiting, and, B, that they did really well. I think USC, based on, I know our national guy, Steve Wilfong, caught up with his mom, and our other national guy, Ryan Bartow, I think caught up with Rashawn briefly. They both think that USC is actually maybe the bigger threat now than Ole Miss was. But at the same time, again, and I think this is what Steve actually had phrased it this way, it's exactly how I feel. I'm more of an actions than words person when it comes to these recruitments. And the fact that he's coming back up for another unofficial that is really very unnecessary. I mean, there's really no reason for him to come back up again this late in the process. Continues to be a good sign for me. He is making that visit. I'd still be very, very surprised if it was not Michigan. I mean, if you follow his recruitment long enough, Michigan's been the constant at the top. There was Auburn for a while. Well, then there was LSU. You know, and then there was Ole Miss. Now there's USC. You know, it's kind of always been like these other schools will pop up, but then Michigan is kind of that constant at the top. People will, you know, want to know everything he's doing at every second. It's impossible and not something I'm really interested in keeping track of. I just tend to let this one play out and feel good about Michigan's chances right now. Mom loved it. Mom loves Harbaugh. He's got a lot of players, a lot of friends that are going to be playing here. You know, and the one thing that they have now that they didn't have when Deshaun Hand, I hate the name of it. The one thing they have now that they didn't have when Sean Hand was making his decision is momentum. You know, they're right in the middle of a 10-win run, and they're in Harbaugh's first season. They're building one of the top recruiting classes in the country. With Hand still 100% convinced to this day that 2 weeks before he was going to choose, he was going to commit to Michigan. Then Michigan lost two straight games, and I think that's really when the hot seat started for Hoke the year before he got fired. I think that's really when the hot seat started to turn up a little bit. I think Alabama got in his ear and was able to convince him to go elsewhere. With Rashawn, I don't think schools can really use those types of arguments against him. So I still think that Michigan's in good shape.
Michigan brought a good friend of his, Michael Dwumfor, a Penn State commit who's more of a nose tackle type, which is something that I've actually thought Michigan has been overlooking in this class, that they need a nose. He didn't flip, but you know, there was a consideration that he might. You said something along the lines of like you were thinking about putting in a crystal ball, but you've been told to hold off.
Yes.
What's the situation there with him?
I still think he's going to end up flipping too. So the thing about Dwumfor's recruitment, people look at him as a new name. He actually kind of isn't. And that's why, like, we got a lot of guff on the Penns from the Penn State boards about Harbaugh just kind of coming in and trying to flip this kid without really knowing him. Well, they're wrong. The biggest reason why is Dwumfor was actually the top prospect or top performing prospect at the satellite camp at the one that was like on the New Jersey Pennsylvania border in June. I remember talking to somebody who was at the camp, said that he got much more attention from the Michigan coaches than anybody. And he's kind of been a guy that they've stayed in contact with throughout the process, and I think kind of felt around on a little bit to see is it a ploy or kind of maybe trying to put the bow on the Gary recruitment. I think it'd be naive to deny that possibility, but he is a good prospect in his own right, and he is someone that they've legitimately been, you know, staying in contact with and kind of quietly recruiting for the last like 3 or 4 months at least. So. I wasn't sure if he was going to flip or not. I think he does eventually. He's gone a little radio silent for the most part, but I agree too. I actually think he's a really good defensive line prospect. He's raw, but he's got a lot of potential, a lot of ability. And, I think Michigan's in a position now where they would like to flip him, head him on.
Connor Murphy, 6'7", 250-pound defensive end out of Arizona, whose older brother played under Harbaugh. You know, his recruitment has never really taken shape either. He went to Oregon, but then Oregon had a lot of changeover. USC, same thing. He complained on Twitter how everybody who was recruiting him kept changing their coaches, which is something that Michigan also did. He has a visit coming up to Michigan next week, and I think he goes to USC the week after. Any idea where he might be leaning or how he might end up? Never mind. Where's he going to school?
Sure. No, I'm with you. Yeah, I actually think so. Yeah, you talk about the defensive staff changes, which yeah were a big sticking point for him. I know he wasn't thrilled about, because we've had Oregon, USC, Michigan as kind of the three schools that have stuck out for him. Well, all three have new defensive coordinators. We'll have new defensive coordinators next season. So where the difference is his long term relationship with Jim Harbaugh and the Harbaugh family. You know, the stories I think we have been told 100 times about. His brother's recruitment. He's real close with Jim Harbaugh personally. Jay Harbaugh is actually kind of taking the primary. He's kind of the primary recruiter in that one now. I think it was originally. I want to say it may have been Greg Madison originally, but Jay Harbaugh's kind of taken the head role in that one for the last like 4 or 5 months. So I think Michigan liked Levi Onwuzurike a little bit more as a defensive end. But again, I don't think we're expecting him to commit to Michigan anymore. So I think Murphy's kind of maybe one of the next guys on that list. One thing to watch with him, since he is 6'7", and Michigan would like to add another offensive tackle, if they don't hit on some of the other offensive line targets they want, I think he's a guy that could potentially project maybe to that side of the ball. I wouldn't fully rule that out. But I think, again, Michigan's been the crystal ball leader for a while. I don't think it'd be Oregon or USC. If it was one of those two, I really wouldn't even know who to guess, actually. Michigan, again, has been around a lot, and this will be his first time being there, too, which is key because he hasn't even been up there yet. So, you know, I think he's another guy that Michigan is in pretty good shape with, actually.
So linebacker is a spot where they have Devin Bush. They had Tarius Johnson, who hasn't taken an official visit, so that might be kind of an indicator.
Sure.
They have a couple of guys on the hook, but it doesn't really seem like they have – a strong lead for any of them. So Jonathan Jones is between Michigan and Notre Dame. And if you talk to a Notre Dame person, they'll say Notre Dame. If you talk to a Michigan person, they'll say Michigan. And they've got Josh Uche, who sites are regarding as a defensive end, but he's like 6'2", 210. He's a linebacker. And
sure.
I think Florida might be the popular choice there. And they have a couple kids coming up next weekend. How do you see the linebacker spot falling out in this class?
So the Jonathan Jones recruitment is interesting. Probably if you'd have asked me in August or like July or August, I'd have said he was probably the biggest lock on Michigan's board. That's changed. It's definitely a Michigan-Notre Dame battle, like you said. We think Dad wants him to go to Notre Dame, while he may personally prefer to go to Michigan. That really has turned into one that could go either way. There's been nothing concrete to suggest it would be Notre Dame, but it's nothing at this point. You know, there's been concrete things in the past, but that's where, you know, recruiting becomes recruiting. There's nothing concrete as of today that would necessarily suggest that he's going to choose Michigan either. So, again, though, I mean, these guys are almost guaranteed early playing time, or at least the opportunity to. And he's been recruited forever by them. He was a DJ Durkin recruit for the most part, but luckily for them, Chris Partridge was the second guy. Even though he worked out of the office, he was kind of the second guy in that recruitment. So the fact that he is now the linebacker's coach and can be out on the road is actually an asset for them in this recruitment. I think he has a really good relationship with Jones and gives them their best shot, really, in my opinion. And Jones seems to have taken a liking to Don Brown also, which is obviously going to be important for some of these guys. Who else are we talking about? Uche.
Ace needs to pronounce this guy.
I think it's Elisi Mbembasi.
Yes, I was gonna bring him up, and I was just gonna say EMB. but Uche, I think the lean is down south right now. But again, he's another guy that's never even been up here. He is Don Brown's first recruit at Michigan, so this is all a Don Brown production here. I mean, if they can get him, actually, to be honest, it's a really good test to see how Don Brown can recruit. Now, if they don't get him, it's not a negative on Don Brown, but if they can pull this guy out of the South immediately like that, I think it's a great indicator that Don Brown has huge potential as a recruiter for Michigan, because his offer sheet is almost exclusively SEC, ACC. Michigan would be coming in really late here and pretty much plucking him from Auburn or Florida. Again, Florida, yeah, I think Florida's probably ahead. Auburn's kind of popped in late here and made it a little bit of a race. But, again, I mean, obviously with a kid coming down from Florida, the official visit will be paramount, you know, especially, you know, the weather and just the change and stuff. So good Don Brown test for sure. Now, Mbembasi or Mb, EMB, three-star linebacker out of, I think, Ellenwood, Georgia. His recruitment's been kind of interesting. So he's another one of those, like, fringe guys that Michigan's kind of maintained contact with. He's not a very big talker. He's a guy, not that we had forgotten about necessarily, but he was close to making a commitment twice, once of which was to Auburn, second of which we don't really know where he was going to commit. He had set a date, and then actually I think Michigan is the one that convinced him to hold off because they wanted him to come up after the dead period. Dontavius Jackson does not look like Michigan, even despite being named in the top five, which is always nice for publicity purposes, but I do not think Dontavius Jackson will commit to Michigan on signing day. He kind of fills that potential guy in the middle, that big body kind of guy. Again, I know our Auburn affiliate, they do a great job breaking guys down. They're really high on him. I'm not sure if he's a take for the Tigers or not, but I know NC State is one of the schools involved. I think Wisconsin? His recruitment's been kind of up and down. So I call him the wild card. He's kind of the wild card at this point. I don't really know what to expect from him. And, you know, I think, again, I'm not 100% sure that he's even a take for them still. But that's something that I'd be willing to admit that I could be wrong on. So he's just not a big talker. But he is a name to keep an eye on. There's no doubt about it.
And then finally, defensive back, where Michigan has a lot of irons in the fire. David Long is supposed to commit on ESPNU on Thursday. All signals looking good from your end on that one?
Yeah, I'd be surprised if he did not commit to Michigan. He's pretty much made it clear to some certain group of people that that Michigan is going to be his choice on Thursday. It would take some kind of change of heart, in my opinion, if he did not commit and then eventually sign with Michigan on National Signing Day. Great job by the staff on that one, too. I mean, he's a guy that was probably right up. He's right up there with Rashawn Gary, Devin Bush Jr., and some others as far as guys that Michigan has recruited, I would say probably harder than anybody else and for a really, really long time. I mean, Jim Harbaugh actually has been very heavily involved in that recruitment, and he's a player that they would be super ecstatic to add. I mean, they like him as not just a player, but as a person too, as a potential ambassador for the program.
He gave, I think, Wilt Fong a quote along the lines of, like, you could be more than just a football player for us. You could, it was quite a pitch.
Yep. Yes.
That was me.
Oh, was you? Sorry.
Yeah. No, it was.
All you Steves look the same.
I just wanted to make it clear that it was me, but no. But it was, yeah, it was like that he could be a game changer for them on and off the field. And that's, boy, that's one of the strongest recruiting pitches that I can remember, you know, and for a young kid to hear that from somebody like Jim Harbaugh, who David probably watched, you know, coaching the Super Bowl 2 or 3 years before that, is, you know, a pretty strong message. So, you know, I think that's something that's resonated with him. Washington's done a great job, though. They've made it a really great race. I know Jimmy Lake, their cornerbacks coach, is probably a name that is not the last time that we're going to hear that name from Michigan, because I think Michigan and Washington are going to continue to battle over some guys on the West Coast. So we expect him to sign with Michigan, though, as of now.
Lavert Hill took a trip to Penn State and caused a minor Twitter storm when Penn State apparently did not commit a violation because he signed financial aid papers. But one of the guys on the Penn State site got the vibe that Michigan State wasn't as much in the race as they thought previously, and that would be good for Michigan, but they are kind of lurking at a point where before Michigan was supposed to be a lock, and a locky lock, not just a lock. So what's his status? You still feeling Michigan for Levert?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, like with that recruitment, I mean, by the time we get done with this podcast, it could be completely different. you know, but, and it's another race where Michigan's kind of been the constant. I'm assuming you probably, I mean, yeah, our Sean Fitz, our Penn State guy, yeah, is probably the one that reported that, you know, that Michigan State may not be as big a factor as they were originally believed to be. I tend to buy that for the most part. I think he's tried to create a little bit of an intrigue in his recruitment, I guess is probably the best way to put it. I'm not saying that he hasn't taken Michigan State seriously or even Penn State, but, you know, I think it's one of those situations. I know mom really wants him to go to Michigan, follow in his brother's footsteps. You know, he likes the staff. I know the staff has felt really good about their chances with him for a while. But, again, I mean, we've seen some of these recruitment, these local recruitments go awry at the last minute. So, again, I think Michigan's in good shape with him. But, you know, I mean, this one's been – it's been such a roller coaster, especially the last, like, 2 months or so. You know, I mean, he was – really, I mean, one thing that I don't know if ever really went public or not, I mean, when he decommitted from Penn State originally, he was supposed to verbal to Michigan within a week afterwards, and he never did. So
I may have just pulled up a pre-written commitment post for him dated April 8th.
Yeah.
April. Yep.
Yeah. So, you know, so when he originally decommitted from them, he was supposed to verbal to Michigan shortly after. We were fully expecting him to. He obviously did not. It's kind of one of those things where, you know, there's been some buzz on from, we'll call him a pretend insider for Michigan State that's been saying he's going to Michigan State the entire time, which is completely and patently false. I mean, he's gone back and forth on committing to Michigan at least two times. You know, so if the Spartans were to pull off the upset here, it'd be another one of those last minute changes of heart. You know, I've had my crystal ball in Michigan and really no plans to change it unless I hear something like legit. I know the coaches at Detroit King are expecting him to commit to Michigan eventually also.
Well, I just, you know, I go back to, he said multiple times he talks to Jordan Lewis every day. And he basically is Jordan Lewis. So that to me is.
They're very similar players.
I was just, you know, it's funny that you said that because that's literally, he is a spitting image of what Jordan Lewis was in high school, at least defensively. The difference with Jordan is that Jordan was great on the offensive side of the ball, too. Levert's good. I mean, I think Levert's a really good player on the offensive side of the ball, too. But Jordan, just something about him on the offensive side of the ball. I always kind of thought Michigan should play him over there a little bit. Maybe they will next year. But, you know, very similar. I agree. And pretty kind of similar personalities, too. Quieter guys. You know, Jordan started to come out of his shell, I think, even just now, like this last year, you know, when the All-American stuff and meeting with the media all the time. I think he's opened up a little bit more, get to learn a little more about his personality. But Levert's a real quiet kid, a lot like his brother Delano. You know, a little more outspoken, I guess is maybe the word to use, but still in general kind of a quieter kid. And that's why I think there's always some uncertainty with those recruitments when the kids are kind of quiet.
Pronounce this one for me. Mr. Hudson's first name.
Is
it Kalik or is it Kalike?
Let's say Kalike.
All right.
We're going to go with that.
That's what we're going with? This is your 61%. Job, man. We rely on you to figure out how to pronounce these names.
Oh, well, I don't get paid to pronunciate. So
that's your job.
Yeah, that is my job.
And he doesn't do, and here's the other, he does not do phone interviews. He refuses to. So I've never again, if he does anything, he's only a texter. And even at that, it's very light. So I've never actually gotten to speak with him in person to find out how to pronounce his name. That's a little inside info there that as to why he can't pronounce it.
Well, but you haven't been on MGO Slack, and MGO Slack is in love with this kid. We watched him in the Semper Fi game, and he was all over the place. Just after his official visit and things started looking pretty good, we went and everybody watched his entire 15-minute senior highlight films where he kills people. He's a slippery
running
back.
From every position.
From every position. He's a slippery running back with great balance. You know, he plays linebacker. He plays safety. He returns kicks. He throws like 30-yard dimes.
He blocks the heck out of people.
He blocks people. We love this kid. Like, we want him. Give him to us, please.
I actually agree. I think Hudson is, I think he's a heavy lean to Michigan now after the official visit. And I wouldn't be surprised if he ended his recruitment sometime in the near future. I think Penn State believes they have a chance of getting him up to campus this weekend for an official visit. But I don't really, to be honest with you, I really don't know if it gets that far.
Nice.
To me, he would take the place of Vic Viramontes as that incredibly awesome three-star athlete that really looks underrated when you watch him on film and you're immediately excited to get him as part of your class guy. And I agree with you guys. One thing about his recruitment I thought that was really interesting when I did some digging on it is that there were a couple members on the current staff that really wanted to offer him earlier in the process. They were kind of rebuffed by a member of the staff who was no longer there. They finally were able to get him an offer and really have recruited him really hard. Because they do. I think they see the same things that you guys just talked about. And he does. He really... There are some guys that you can watch on film. It sounds a little cliche, but guys that you watch on film and you think they're fit what Jim Harbaugh likes to do.
Exactly.
And he's definitely one of them. And, he's a pure athlete for them though. He could, again, they look like they're pretty stacked at running back, at least numbers wise going forward. Especially with, I still kind of think that Chris Evans will end up getting carries before he'll split out. But he could potentially be a running back for them. He could be a linebacker and he could be a safety for them. Those are three spots, that he could end up at. And he is, I think of anybody on their board, I think he's the most legitimate, player that you could just label as a pure athlete for them. I think they just want him and they'll figure out what to do with him later. But Penn State really, kind of hurt themselves in his recruitment. Earlier in the process, he tried committing to them a couple times and it sounds like he was rebuffed. Not a good look when later on you're actually trying to get him and you can't fully. So, I think that's something that Michigan's going to end up. It's going to end up being a Michigan's advantage and another guy.
Isn't the James Franklin era fun?
They managed to hold on to Miles Sanders, but they got to be a little bit worried about how things are filling up. Finally, two safety cornerback types, Jordan Fuller.
I can see why Will Fuller's name would come up.
The last New Jerseyite who Michigan has not locked down. And a Kansas guy who just got an interesting offer named Isaiah Simmons. He's a four-star type. He might actually grow into linebacker since he's 6'3". These guys are not really talked about except on the fringe of Michigan's ability. Fuller's supposed to be an Ohio State lean, and nobody really knows what Isaiah Simmons is.
Although Harbaugh just came across the Twitter feed that Harbaugh had an in-home with him, so it looks like that's
so they're going after him. Like, how likely are either of these guys to end up in the class?
Sure. So Jordan Fuller is another relatively quiet prospect, but I would actually put him in that Rashawn Gary, David Long category as far as the effort that Michigan's going to put on from here until National Signing Day. I think he's their top target that'll be on campus this weekend. I do think Ohio State leads. Ohio State only has, I think, probably two or three slots left at most. They're pretty much reserving one for him if he wants in. He admitted, I think it was at the Army game, he admitted that Ohio State led over the summer, but then he backed off. I still think the Buckeyes probably are the leader. I do think Michigan is the one school maybe, along with, I think Notre Dame is probably still in it a little bit too, but I think Michigan, this will be a big weekend for them with him, obviously. And he's a guy I think they would allow to potentially play both ways too. They really like him that much. I mean, he's a top 100 guy, New Jersey kid, obviously. They love it. They love New Jersey prospects. Again, I think I'd be lying if I didn't say I think he ends up signing with Ohio State, but I think Michigan is going to give all they have. I mean, I think him and Gary will be the top two guys after Long makes his choice this week. So with Simmons, though, he's kind of an interesting prospect. Michigan and Clemson both offered within the last week. Nebraska's kind of been the constant in his recruitment. Weirdly enough, I think Kansas is crystal ball leader at this point.
I definitely
don't think he's going to sign with the Jayhawks. I don't know. I mean, he's got two official visits set for the next 2 weeks. He's supposed to officially visit Nebraska this weekend, and I can't remember who his last one is next weekend.
Louisville.
I wouldn't be surprised if he canceled that one and went to either Michigan or Clemson for sure. It'll just be a matter of who. What will be interesting to see is if he cancels his Nebraska official this weekend and goes to the other, because he's been to Nebraska a few times, and he's got some experience there. He knows the coaching staff. But at Michigan and Clemson are two really big offers. And I agree with Brian. I think actually Simmons could end up being an outside linebacker for them eventually. I think he kind of fits that mold a little bit more. But as far as where he's leaning, he's really a brand new name on the board. Seeing Harbaugh there today, actually, pretty good indicator to me that they wouldn't mind adding him. You know, it's just a matter of getting him up. I'm assuming that was a major part of today's conversation between Jim Harbaugh and Simmons, was trying to get him up for one of these last 2 weekends for officials. So as of this podcast today, I'm not really sure where he's going to end up. But I do think that he has flown up Michigan's board. He must be another guy that Don Brown really likes a lot, because it just doesn't make it. It's kind of adds up as far as that goes.
Finally, Quinn Norton, kicker. Overnight recruit thing that has – just don't read the comments. It's all going to be terrible gay jokes, as if they've never heard of a guest room. It's terrible. But Penn State commit obviously has been kind of in that same boat as Hill was for a while, where it's like he's a Penn State commit, but nobody expects him to go to Penn State. Is there a holdup there? Is that why he hasn't committed? Is it like a scholarship room kind of thing? Go ahead.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
I mean, I don't think Harbaugh would have wasted his time going down to Rockford to begin the end of the dead period, the final stretch here, if they didn't really want this guy in. I guess I'll just be blunt. He really likes attention. It's really no other way to explain this recruitment. You know, he's been to Michigan. He went to four games this year, I think. I think maybe went to one Penn State game. He's supposed to take an official to Baylor, too, the last weekend of the process. On January 29th, he's scheduled to be in Waco for the weekend. He's supposed to head up to Penn State this weekend. But again, you're right, though. I mean, this has been a situation where I'd be lying. I don't even think the Penn State coaches are probably just getting a little tired of this recruitment. I don't know why he hasn't ended it yet. I don't think he's going to sign with Baylor. They just offered, and I know even our Baylor insiders were really surprised when he decided to set an official there. I think he ends up at Michigan in some capacity. People have wondered if he'd be a gray shirt. I absolutely don't see that happening. I'd be very surprised if that was the case. And, Harbaugh, you follow what Harbaugh does. It's usually a pretty good indicator of guys that they really like. My view on it was they must want him if he went down there for an in-home that quickly and in that fashion. But then on the flip side, I think it also was a good indicator that Michigan must feel pretty good about some other prospects if they're using some valuable time this late in the process to try to recruit an in-state kicker. So, his recruitment's been a really interesting one to cover. I'd be really surprised if he didn't end up in Michigan in some capacity.
All right, awesome. I think that is literally every guy on the board except for Joel DeBlanco.
I don't know what the deal is on that situation. His offer sheet is pretty underwhelming. I don't know if he's a last minute guy. If Michigan misses on some other guys, obviously I think compared to his other offers on paper, if Michigan offered, he'd jump on it immediately. So, is it a Norfleet type situation where they offer on signing day? If they miss on some of these other guys, I guess that from his standpoint, that's probably a best case scenario.
I was just emphasizing how comprehensive we had been and how patient you had been. I think this has been.
Do have one more question.
Oh, you do?
That isn't a player on the board, but is a current commit. Michael Onwenu setting an official to Michigan State. Is there anything to worry about
good
there?
Good question.
Initial response I got today was no. But visits are always, a visit is a visit. And the one thing with Onwenu that I know and have noticed, one school that had really been kind of recruiting him hard even since he was committed was Oklahoma. And Oklahoma got a commitment from, remember this name, Giancarlo Valentin, the three-star guard out of Imhotep in Philly, teammates with Nasir Upshur, the tight end target. Valentin had Michigan pretty high on his board. Valentin committed to Oklahoma, and actually him and Onwenu had kind of hit on a friendship there. Like, they're pretty good friends. I think they keep in contact. And Oklahoma had been kind of making a run on Mike for a while, trying to get him on campus, but they never did. So to see him get offered by Michigan State and immediately schedule an official visit is again, you can't say he's not interested. Otherwise, he wouldn't go.
Yeah.
But I don't think Michigan is particularly concerned about, like, a potential flip. I mean, Onwenu's kind of quietly recruited other guys, was at the Army game, trying to recruit some of the uncommitted guys, get them to commit to Michigan eventually. But, he's got a couple teammates that are in East Lansing. So, again, never say never. Can't count the Spartans out. They've done a good job on the recruiting trail this year, actually. Really good job, in my opinion. But I don't know. I don't see them. It feels like it's too late. So that's my opinion on it.
Yeah, they got to be like the last school in the country to offer him. Like,
seriously.
Yeah, yep. And it was a strategic offer, though. It's clear that, they waited until after his Michigan official to offer him so that they could try to get him on campus last. I don't think the timing of the offer was a coincidence. But, yeah, I mean, it was weird, that they waited. He did actually take an unofficial to Michigan State during the season, but it was one of those, like, team trips.
Yeah,
where, like,
cast goes
literally,
up, yeah.
Yeah, literally the whole Castec roster was there. So he did go to visit them earlier in the season, and they didn't offer him then. And, now they come through with an offer here. But, yeah, I still think he signs in Michigan. I mean, he's a big part of their class, and they love him. So,
indeed, he's also a Harbaugh kind of guy. So,
absolutely.
All right, thank you. This has been Inside the Crooked Blue Line, starring Steve Lorenz. The longest segment I think we've had, and thank you for your time, Steve.
Oh, not a problem, guys. All good. Anytime.
Yep. All right, this has been the MGO Podcast, presented by UGP and Moe's.
Thank you for listening to the MGO Podcast. I am Ace Ambender, along with Brian Cook. We would like to thank our sponsors, Underground Printing and Moe's, Homeshore Lending, the Alumni Association of the University of Michigan, Residence Inn Ann Arbor Downtown, and Ann Arbor Elder Law. If you're looking for me for the next 2.5 weeks, I will be in a bunker writing hello posts.